Blog Talk Radio.
Diane, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Diane. I just lost my electricity, but we're back on normal now. This is Larry Jacobs on Education
yes.
Talk Radio,
okay,
everybody.
So it really happened. You lost your electricity.
Just for a blip, and it knocked out the phones, et cetera. We're here in southwestern Maine. There's terrible thunderstorms running through.
Amazing.
And literally,
the sun is out here in Boston.
As it should be on that beautiful city. Okay, but you see, here in... I apologize for not running the music, et cetera. I was so concerned I didn't want you to
hang
up.
But when it got silent, I was worried that I lost
yeah.
you, and I just thought I'd wait and see. I had my email on so you could email me, given that we're so in touch, in case I had done something. Okay. Because I don't have call waiting or anything, so if my phone's off the hook, you can't reach me.
Well, if I lose you again, okay, you'll know it's electricity, and we'll
reschedule
the show.
And should I call back,
I'll
or should I wait for you to
that.
Call me?
Yeah, right. Just hang it up, and because we never know what's going to happen up here. But so far, so good. I usually play nice music, Diane, when we
okay.
start the show, and I apologize for that.
Do you want my phone number so you can call me back if you need to?
No.
If we have
to cancel. By the way, we're on the air right now, so if we have to cancel, we'll just cancel and change again. And welcome to the show, Diane. And now let me tell everybody, I got a couple of things I want to say. First of all, that wonderful guest who's being so nice and so patient is Dr. Diane Levin. Is it Levin or Levin? How do you pronounce it?
It's Levin. You got it right.
Thank you. Okay. She's a professor of early childhood education at Wheelock College, and she's also an author. I'm going to go over this in 1 second. Okay. And she has written a new book called Beyond Remote Control Childhood, Teaching Young Children in the Media Age. That's not all she's done, and I'm going to go over that in a second. By the way, you're listening to Education Talk Radio. My name's Larry Jacobs. We're going to archive the show at our website, which is education-talkradio.org, and we're going to tweet it at EduTalkRadio. Okay? And I'll give you all that Diane's information in a second. I do have to thank somebody, Diane. We have a sponsor today. Our show today is sponsored by Walden University's Richard W. Riley College of Education and Leadership, and they're a proud sponsor of today's show. They're working very closely with NAEYC. They'll be sponsoring the upcoming NAEYC Thought Leaders in Early Childhood webinar series. And by the way, we did a show on that yesterday, which was wonderful, with someone you know, Diane, Dr. Kyle Snow over at NAEYC.
Oh, yes. Great.
Yeah,
okay.
Great.
It's nice
says hello
these connections are happening. Given that NAEYC is the publisher of this book that we're talking about, it's great to know that all these connections are happening.
Absolutely, and they do, and I want to stay in touch with you as we go on. I want to make sure everyone knows that to learn more about Walden University's early childhood degree programs, they have good ones, and how you can connect with nationally recognized education experts, master teachers, scholar practitioners, visit their website. It's waldenu.edu, and then you go /education, or you can call 866-492-5336 to speak with an enrollment advisor at Walden. You can earn your education degree from an NCATE-accredited university dedicated to increasing educator effectiveness, and they're doing a whale of a job in young childhood education. And again, sponsoring these NAEYC webinars, Thought Leaders in Early Childhood, that's going to be coming up. We did the show yesterday. You can check it out on our website. And now let me give our guest the real introduction here. Okay. Dr. Diane Levin. Welcome, Diane. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to read this because there's so much here. Okay, and I want everybody to know just how wonderful you are. And by the way, your picture, sure, you look like the sweetest, most nurturing person in the world. I'm glad you're
here. Well, I hope
that.
So.
Yeah,
that's nice.
I mean,
I hope
really,
so.
It's,
thank
it's
you.
Incredible. You're welcome. I'm telling you, you look like a little angel here coming. It's just incredible. Okay? Diane Levin is a professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston, Massachusetts, where amazingly it's sunny out while it's storming like crazy up here. She teaches about children's play. I love this. A service learning course in Northern Ireland on how schools can promote peace building in communities affected by war and conflict, and a summer institute called Media Madness. Now, this is key. Her new book, this is what we're going to talk about today, is called Beyond Remote Control Childhood, Teaching Young Children in the Media Age. But she has written, and I just want to say this is so important, she's written 9 other books, including, and I love this, and this has been something I've watched with regret, so sexy so soon, the new sexualized childhood and how parents can protect their kids. You wrote that with a lady named Jean Kilborn, The War Play Dilemma, and you wrote another book called Teaching Young Children in Violent Times. Okay, and Diane speaks about around the world on the impact of violence and peace building. I love this. Media and societal issues on children, families, and schools. And let me just continue. Okay, you were too shy in your little sheet, Diane, that you sent me. Okay, you're blogging at the Huffington Post, and you had a blog on August 1st, 2013, just recently, about Detroit poverty and young children, and poverty is what's killing us out there. And then you were quoted in Boston Magazine, and you've been in the Washington Post. Your website is Diane E. Levin, Diane E. Levin at .com, Diane E. Levin, L-E-V-I-N, .com. And also you can learn more at naeyc.org, which is the National Association for Educating Young Children. So you were too shy when you gave me your little your little intro here, Diane.
Well, thank you. But is there any time left to talk now that you read all that?
And that concludes our show, so thank you very much. Well, we did a good job selling your stuff here, you know? Well, by the way, that sexuality thing, it drives me nuts, and not that I'm a prude, but kids are too young, getting too involved in all this stuff, but that's another story, okay? Remote, and I don't think I have to tell you that, remote-controlled childhood, okay, is the title of your book, Teaching Young Children in the Media Age, okay? Teaching Young Children in the Media Age. So are you saying remote-controlled in terms of fighting over the remote or too much helicopter parenting?
I'm not talking about helicopter parenting, and we can talk about that more if you want, but by remote-controlled childhood, I mean there are kind of two big areas that I look at around that kind of organizing idea, and that is that children are more connected to screens and other people's programs now. So they're being remote controlled by the programs other people have created as they try to follow what's on the screen and do what the program says.
Program
or teaching.
In what? Are you talking about in school or
I'm
on
talking,
their little
No, I'm talking about in
their
in their whole in their lives, starting in babyhood, that more and more of their time they are connected to screens and programs. And though that involvement affects the whole process by which they interact with the world, they end up becoming kind of dependent on programs that lead them through the script instead of creating their own ideas, their own programs, their own activities in the real world. So that's one piece of remote-controlled childhood, how they now interact with the world. The other piece is more they're getting all kinds of lessons, content lessons, about violence, about gender, about commercialization.
Yes.
And that's another part of the remote control. More and more that information becomes the formula by which they interact with the world and develop and grow. So I use it to both talk about the content and the process issues by which media is affecting children.
And why is that? Let's talk about the remote controlled part, what you said where their life is controlled by that screen. Let's just say it's simple.
Right.
Okay. And why is, and I'm asking this obviously to get the answer from you, why is that dangerous? And I'm thinking about it here. To me, it helps to destroy, and I don't know if I'm right or not, creativity, that aspect of it. But I find it interesting that the geniuses who put together all this technology and the screens and all that, most of them didn't have that when they were a kid. Okay.
Right.
And now that they have it, what's
right.
going to happen with the next generation?
Right.
All of a sudden,
and you're right.
And I'm thinking here, Diane, all of a sudden somebody's going to get a little pinky ball and start throwing it up in the air in the year 2030 and go, hey, here's an idea. Let's play catch, and he'll be the next Henry Ford.
Exactly. You know, that kind of invention. I mean, there's several important points there. I mean, one is, it is better for children to start using screens extensively when they're older, when they've had a chance to develop a foundation in the real world where they've been in charge. I mean, I'm a former early childhood teacher, and children used to, I put Play-Doh out that I made, and it'd be out every day, and kids would build and get better and better and better, do more and more things, work together. Now teachers tell me that they put out Play-Doh and kids poke it and say, what does it do?
Oh, wow.
Now, the kids in my class who were doing all those amazing things, they were creative, But the other thing they were was problem finders and problem solvers. How can I make the Play-Doh flat? How can I make it round? How can I make little skinny strips? How can I make it look like spaghetti? I mean, they were constantly problem finding and problem solving, and that whole, that's the part of media technology that worries me the most in terms of remote control childhood, because what it means is, the term that I use in the book is problem solving deficit disorder. That we talk about ADD, attention deficit disorder, but there are more and more children who say they're bored when they don't have a screen. Screens make things exciting. They're zap, 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 zap. You're busy. Your adrenaline's going. And so it's exciting. And so when you have to poke the Play-Doh, it's very boring now. But the lessons that children learned from playing with Play-Doh when they were young was part of the foundation they needed for more sophisticated learning that comes later on.
You know, I hate to age myself here, but I remember when Play-Doh came out as opposed to clay.
But you see, yeah. I make my own Play-Doh.
I remember it. And we used to take the Play-Doh and use it on the there's another, I'm showing my age, on the cartoons, the comic books and all that sort
yes.
of thing. And you could pull the picture off. But I have a question, okay?
Yes.
And years ago, I thought I was really getting into technology, and I read it. This is years ago. Again, I'm dating myself again. But I bought a game that was a video game, okay? And I'm in my 40s
mm-hmm.
at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called Myst, M-Y-S-T. And it
yes.
was some kind of medieval fantasy. I don't even, because I bought it,
mm-hmm.
plugged it in the computer, literally had no idea what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Literally had no idea. Now I know what to do with Play-Doh, okay?
Right.
But I didn't know what to do with Myst. It got so bad
How
that I had to
actually. You? How old were you?
At this point, I'm in my 40s.
No, when you got Myst.
When I was in my 40s.
Oh, you got it recently. Okay, I thought you were
No, I'm in my
something.
60s now. I am in my 60s now. I'm talking about 1,000
okay.
years ago. Okay, so my point, thank you for thinking that. And I look just like Brad Pitt, just in case anybody
mm-hmm.
wants to know.
Okay, I'll remember
okay.
that when I...
thank you. Come
when
on.
When I'm looking for you.
Okay, but my point is, I called one of my kids' friends upstairs, okay? And I said, what the
mm-hmm.
hell's going on here? And it literally 55 seconds, he had figured out the whole game.
Right.
All right? Now he, and I'm leading up to something here, he was able somehow to solve this problem of even getting the game started. I'd still be looking at it if I hadn't called him, and I'm talking about 1993.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So when you say that the screen, and I'm just curious about
mm-hmm.
this, when you say that the screen leads to a problem-solving deficit disorder, is
mm-hmm.
it, they seem to be able to solve technological problems.
Well, how old
was
the boy who came
down? That doesn't seem to be where you're driving it. That was my
right.
whole point of that story.
Yeah.
That they seem
well,
to be
how
able
old
to
was the boy?
He was 17.
See, what I'd like to say is that he was a good problem solver, and in part I would bet when he was 4, 5, 6, and 7, his primary vehicle of
good.
Spending his time was not screens. Kids can't. I mean, I'm not saying screens are all bad, but what I'm saying is they're very seductive and they lure children in, and so they don't get involved the way that boy who helped you did. I would argue that what he was doing is what he's learned how to do at 17 in that case is just he's learned how to figure out programs that other people have created from being involved in programs as he got older and was a problem solver already. And that many children today, yes, they do learn to follow the program that's on the screen, but that is a kind of remote control program. Every kid who's good at the game will be following exactly the same program as every other kid. And that's very different from using your own, you know, every kid I worked with Play-Doh, didn't do quite the same thing. They came in with different experiences. They brought those experiences to the Play-Doh. As they used the Play-Doh, they developed different ways of doing things than other kids. So it was a kind of a way I got to know children from seeing the kids who, you know, always worried about all the little details versus the kids who use lots of big physical motor stuff, you know, pounding. You get to know the children by all the different ways they can use it. You can't do that with a with video games in the same way. And but furthermore, we know that young children, and the reason why I say it's so important we think about young children is that when they are, we know developmentally that they need real-world experience. They have to feel things. They need to manipulate things. They need to see how they work. That physical knowledge is the foundation for later, more sophisticated, abstract knowledge. So again,
I'm thinking of that little children's book we had, Pat the Bunny, which was
You can't do that online, right?
No, you can't do that online.
Right, and kids really could pretend to read the book and pat it in a way where they could take charge. They could, you know, be the, you know, they found an interesting problem to work on, how they could read the book, and it was the beginning of literacy for many kids.
Exactly. Let me give you a plug here. Beyond Remote Controlled Childhood, Teaching Young Children in the Media Age is an NAEYC book authored by our wonderful guest today, Dr. Diane Levin, Professor of Education at Wheelock College, Huffington Post writer, Boston Magazine quoted, okay, Washington Post quoted. She gets around, I got to tell you. You can learn more at naeyc.org, and you can also go to Diane E. You got to put that middle E in there. DianeE11.com, okay, and you'll learn all about this stuff. You know, this is really dangerous. How is this going to manifest itself? And I'm thinking, you know, with iPads and all that sort of thing,
right.
A parent takes their kid to preschool, okay? Or
right. I mean, it's a huge
school.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let me just finish. So the parent, being a parent in this day and age, and having grown up, most of them now being digital natives, they take
right.
the child to school, and they want to have, I assume, I don't have young kids anymore, but they want the heavy duty technology, so the kid grows up as a techno genius, okay, and
right.
winds up going to MIT or something.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're saying is that's not really the best way, or certainly the only way. And how does a
right.
early childhood educator react to all this?
Right.
Well, it kind of puts them in the middle.
Well, there's two things. One is, one of the biggest growth industries now in the technology industry, one of the biggest growth areas, is technology for young children.
Right.
There's almost no research to support the claims, but because of how computers and technology is programmed, children seem very smart when they start pushing the buttons and they know what to
exactly.
do. Parents think their kids are geniuses. But what we know is kids who, and the American Academy of Pediatrics talks about this, children, you know, they recommend no screen time until age 2. And then
wow.
no more than one
wow.
hour a day after that. And they say that there's beginning to be research that says less language development, shorter attention span without screens, more higher levels of aggression when kids get hooked on screens when they're too young. Now, we need much more research. Those are preliminary studies. But why don't we have to prove that this stuff is safe like we do with medications before we have it take up so much of kids' lives? The average screen time for kids is going up exponentially as we speak. There's at younger and younger ages. So that's one crucial issue for us to think about. But the other piece is, what happens when kids go to school? I think all early childhood educators need to read my book. Because
You know what? I do too. But let me say it again.
Okay.
Beyond Remote Controlled Childhood, Teaching Young Children in the Media Age, Diane E. Levin, NAEYC,
okay.
published it. Go ahead, Diane.
Perfect.
And you're right. They should read it.
So the reason I say it is teacher training programs need to do a better job at helping teachers. I mean, what they often do is say, here's how you can use technology, because the people teaching the courses haven't studied this issue particularly either. But what I would argue is what the book tries to do, it tries to help early childhood educators understand how do screens and technology affect young children and their learning and development and behavior, like what you and I were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, what can they do about it? So how can you get a child who pokes the Play-Doh and doesn't know what to do? And how can you help that child become a great Play-Doh player? It may sound like, you know, the old times, but the better Play-Doh player you have, the better. I have my own son who's now in his early 30s who was at the beginning of the screen takeover. You talked about the parents now being totally involved in screens, and I talk about their first deregulation generation when screens really, marketing to children through screens and screens more and more in children's lives started happening, and they are now, and the toys they played with, and that's true of children today, say when you play, imitate what you saw on the screen. But we now have second deregulation screen generation children. So we have many parents who don't know how to play with their children, because I started studying this issue years ago. I've been doing this a long time. And those parents, what teachers started saying 30 years ago was, kids aren't playing anymore. They're just imitating Power Rangers. Or, you know, or My Little Ponies, if they were girls, because things became gender divided, then that was the end of the women's movement, where they tried to encourage children to develop a whole range of skills if they were girls and boys. But so what I wrote the book for now is to really try to help teachers understand how are children different now, what lessons are they learning now, both content-wise as well as remote control-wise, and how can you... I think many of the kind of push down for worksheets and rote instruction, which is happening now in the early years, which I'm very concerned about, I think is in part a response, because those kinds of worksheets give children the programs they seem to need because they don't know how to take initiative and problem find. I mean, I'm throwing at you, but...
Yeah, no, that's cool. Let me ask you something. One of the companies I like to have on the show, crack up every time they run the show. I have so much fun, and they're very involved with kids and schools. It's Crayola, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you've been talking about Play-Doh, okay? You've been using
right.
that, but with I'm just curious. We're not just sticking with Play-Doh. I mean, crayons, anything
right.
that allows them to be creative.
Right.
Even a couple of rocks would probably be
right.
fun. They can make
sketch pads and smelling magic markers were one of the wonderful things that can get kids involved because of the smell. Absolutely. Play-Doh is just a kind of graphic example everyone can relate to. But it's true, I teach the play courses for our students at WeLock, and we talk about these issues. And just yesterday, a student told me this is the fifth year she's taught at a summer camp, and it's the first time when she taught them a new tag kind of game. They played it once, and then they said, okay, what can we do now? She said the previous 4 years, the children got excited about it all summer. They were playing it. And now she felt she had to find books to find new games to teach them every day because they wanted to constantly get their new dose of something. So that's another example. Kids, I have another student who for the play course last year, they have to do a project, and her project was trying to answer the question, how can they get the children I nanny for to be excited when I say, let's go outside, instead of saying, no, they don't want to go? And she started using bubbles inside the house in the spring before it got to be really warm. They started getting excited about bubbles, and then she said, let's go outside and try to see what happens to the bubbles with the wind that's out there today. And they went out, they got all excited, and they started asking if they could go outside to blow bubbles. That led to her start gardening, doing a little garden with the kids outside that they got interested in as the weather got warmer. So... there are many, there's not one formula for making it better, but those are the kinds of experiences I try to help teachers and parents think about how to have with children. And can I mention one other website?
Of course.
There's an organization that I'm a founder of that's now 15 years old called Truce, T-R-U-C-E, Teachers Resisting Unhealthy Children's Entertainment. And we have prepared guides. Truth, we've prepared guides to help teachers can give to parents, but to help them develop activities in the home and choose toys that can promote more open-ended, less programmed play. And the website for Truth Teachers is truceteachers.org.
truceteachers.org, O-R-G,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Okay. Cool. Let me ask you a question. This is going to be an odd question, or maybe it isn't, but it strikes me as an odd question.
Okay.
People are so concerned about children being kidnapped. It used to be when I was growing up, my parents would throw us out to you know, and we'd come back at 5 at 8 in the morning, we'd come back at 5 in the afternoon. They had no idea where we were. That's all changed, and probably for the better, I have to tell you. But it's an old story that kids don't go outside and organize themselves and play. Okay? And I'm wondering if parents are encouraging the screen usage because the kid is kind of forced to be inside or close by, so to speak.
Right.
Although he's not a young kid, but when my nephew moved from Texas to Philadelphia, he was always in contact playing games on the computer with his buddies down in Tyler, Texas.
Right,
okay?
Right.
And so I'm curious if parents aren't, I'll say the word responsible, but you can take it from there, in terms of keeping the kids tied to the screen so that they can see them all the time.
Right. Well, two things. I mean, there's many. You've put many important pieces together, and I agree with everything you're saying. But I'm always hesitant to blame parents because what I think is that, for instance, in the case of parents who need to make dinner, when the more screens kids have, the more they need them. So if you need to make dinner and you need your kid to do something, if your kid hasn't developed other ways to entertain themselves besides screens, then you need to put a screen on to make dinner, to make a phone call, to do work you need to do. And many parents say, well, I use it just a little and then a little more and then a little more. And now I realize it's become this huge force in my kid's life and he's bored or she's bored all the time when she doesn't have it. And that kind of zap, 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 zap of the screen, that can make other things seem boring. So parents do need to put screens on when their kids are in the house. The idea that kids aren't going outside now is another crucial thing to think about. I have the students in my play course. Right now they're interviewing someone over age 50 about their play when they were young. And every single one, whether they're in, you know, rural Jamaica, the country of, you know, or whether they're in urban Brooklyn, they're outside playing. And whether they're in rich communities or poor communities. And the kids help each other. The older kids help the younger kids. Grown-ups aren't very involved. Now I call it, and my next book may be called, if I write it, Danger, Danger Everywhere, Raising Children in a Culture of Fear, which is the other piece you're talking about.
Yeah,
and that is something that, because we all watch screens, more kids are not being kidnapped than they were 40 years ago. But we think they are because when one kid is kidnapped, we hear about it for a week every 5 minutes on the news.
Right.
So parents are more scared about that. And I've seen little kids who are scared after there was a boy in Cambridge killed about 10 years ago. It was a horrible story. And
I remember the story.
Okay, they taught stranger danger to all the children. And I have a colleague who runs a child care center, and they were walking to a park with the kids. A man walked up to the teacher and say, can you please tell me how to get to thus and so street? And a kid started crying hysterically because the teacher was talking to a stranger.
Wow.
I mean, so it's not like every one of these things happens with every child. But, I mean, but the whole notion of kids, and kids then see tons and tons of entertainment violence, which is the subject of my second blog on Huffington Post.
Yes.
You mentioned the first one.
Yeah,
but the idea that screen violence teaches kids that the world's a dangerous place and can make them more fearful. Even when it's entertainment violence, they can't always distinguish what's a movie with actors with violence and what's happening in the real world.
Let me ask you this. This is a curiosity again, and you know, I'm in my mid-60s, and so I grew up in the 50s, all right?
Right.
And what's the difference? And I know there is one, but help me out here and help everybody else out. A lot of these same laments were brought about in the 50s when the television culture took over.
Right.
Okay, and believe me, my parents let me watch TV till I was blue in the face. I just loved watching TV. I also went outside and played. I lived in an inner city neighborhood with a million kids my age.
So you know what I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah, but TV, everybody was moaning and groaning about TV in the 50s, how it's going to ruin everything. Is there a parallel between this and the screens you're talking about?
Well, what I'm doing is talking about a range of children. I mean, yes, there's a parallel, and all new things mean we need to adjust and think about how to deal with it. And that's one reason, again, why I want to help teachers deal with how things are remote controlled now, because I do think they're appropriate responses, And I do think there are ways we can promote the optimal development of children in these times. And I talk to many parents and meet many children where that's the case. You know, the parents have figured out ways to have their kids in this culture, and I learn from them. That's where a lot of my lessons come from that are in the book, you know, for thinking about what we can do. But so that it's not, I mean, so there is the doom and gloom piece. I'm talking about the worst scenario, but all children are along that continuum I'm talking about more than they were in the 50s, but the 50s may have been when that continuum began. I know during World War II there was concern about all the war play that children did, as they kept hearing about all the things on the radio about what was happening in the war, and they would bring it to their play. I mean, so that, yes, outside forces affect children, but we need to think about how those outside forces are affecting children, how and what we want to do about it, what we can do about it, and that's what we need to think about now.
And what about boys versus girls?
Oh, wow. Okay, yes. I mentioned deregulation. I taught the first course in the Boston area called Sexism in Education that tried to talk about, we're not going to make boys and girls the same. We don't know, because we don't have a world that's totally neutral, to know how boys and girls would be different in a neutral world. But we know we can help boys and girls get better at more things and not get totally caught up in stereotypes of what's for boys and what's for girls, as we have now, or as we had then. So I taught the course. I think we were making progress, and then deregulation, which I mentioned, came, and one of the marketers started creating huge industries to market to children through media, and they used gender as one of the huge, biggest marketing tools. All toy, 9 of the 10 best-selling toys 1 year after deregulation was gender divided and had a TV show. So we had Care Bears, My Little Pony, Rainbow Bright for girls. We had He-Man, G.I. Joe, Transformers for boys. And teachers started saying boys and girls weren't playing together as much. You know, the boys were caught up in their stuff and girls were caught up in their stuff. And they had boys and girls playing together. It was harder to get it to happen. They had to be more intentional. And that's continued to escalate. So I first wrote my book, The War Play Dilemma, to talk about what was happening with boys and their imitation of war play from screens and media-linked toys. And now I've written So Sexy, So Soon to talk more about girls. But with girls, it's also how boys are learning to look at girls. You know, they have to be pretty. They have to be sexy. There's all kinds of things boys are learning. And then girls are learning that about themselves. Boys are learning they have to be tough and macho and ready to fight, and girls are learning that about boys. So we see more bullying and teasing in schools, I think in part, because boys are learning to be tough and macho. And children are developing, I mean, both girls and boys are taught to be objects. How girls look determines their value. How tough boys are determines their value. And I've started calling the impact of that on children compassion deficit disorder. Because they're glued to screens and not interacting with the world as much. They're not getting the feedback they need to learn how to develop socially and what kind of behavior, how to have reciprocal behavior that's learned. And they're getting modeled all kinds of objectification, you know, of looking and behaving to fit the TV, imitating the model on the screen. And so more and more potential mean-spirited behavior. So, I mean, for years I worked with schools after deregulation to encourage conflict resolution curriculum, and I've done work on that. But what's happening now is with No Child Left Behind and testing, all the social issues are disappearing from the curriculum, and I think it's a real disaster.
Yeah, a lot of people do think it's a real disaster. I know that.
Yep.
And,
I
always try to make this little excuse, okay, because I just always like to say, you know, when they develop No Child Left Behind, a lot of people bash that, okay, and I do tend to agree with that, but it wasn't like anybody sat down and said, let's ruin education, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they thought they were doing the right thing. It's turning out it isn't, but the good news is...
But they didn't use any
research.
They didn't use any research. They did not use any research. Sorry, say that again.
Oh, no, I'm just saying they put it in, and now you have something to argue about.
Right.
Bingo.
Well, they put it in.
I know.
They put it in without using any of the research we have on how young children learn. And they assumed it would solve the problems of poverty.
Yep.
the subject of my first Huffington Post blog.
That's the problem,
and
right there.
And all
there.
The research
the
shows
problem.
That that's not how we solve poverty. We had the war on poverty in the 60s, and we knew we used the research we had on how you combat the impact of poverty. Schools isn't going to solve it, but now every teacher I trained for the last 30 years is almost all, everyone I've talked to, is miserable about how they can't use what they know about what they how they need to teach if they're in
wow.
the public school domain.
That's what a friend of mine, who was teaching, she's retired now, but she was teaching kindergarten, and she says even then they have to teach, she used the term, to the test. They're all teaching to the test, making them crazy.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's a tough world out there. It really is. It's got to be tough, you know, when you're out there as a professor, okay, looking at all this research, seeing it, and then you get in, and, you know, it's just, wow, it's just, it's a tough world out there. I think you nailed it pretty good, and I hope a lot of people read your book. It's an NAEYC book. We have to go. It's called Beyond Remote Controlled Childhood, Teaching Young Children in the Media Age. And that, I said this yesterday with Kyle, if you do it right then, you got a good foundation for the future. And you said this too. It's not only that, it's poverty. Okay? And explain to me in a million years how they think the sequester and Head Start is going to help this country. I can't figure this out to save my life. But we don't have time. That's a whole doctoral thesis.
Right. But thank you for talking about these issues. It's so important.
Well, you're a wonderful guest, and I wish you good luck. And with the book and all your books, this one fascinates me, So Sexy, So Soon, The New Sexualized Childhood, How Parents Can Protect Their Kids. Okay, they got to protect their kids in this media age, too, and get them thinking clearly. Diane, thank you. This was just wonderful. I really love
that. Well,
thank
you. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure as well. Now go enjoy that sunny day in Boston.
And I hope you keep your electricity.
So far, so good. Just for that blip right when the show was starting. Thanks for being so patient. You were wonderful.
Yes,
thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Diane E. Levin is a professor at Wheelock College. Now, you can get her book at naeyc.org. The book, this one, is called Beyond Remote Controlled Childhood, Teaching Young Children in the Media Age. She has written others, and you can learn about all of that at her website, which is Diane E. Levin. I'll spell it for you, DianeeLevin.com, Diane E. Levin. Okay, and she also, I'll just say this, Truce, T-R-U-C-E, truceteachers.org. I must thank, well, I can't thank them enough, our good friends over at Walden University's Richard W. Riley College of Education and Leadership. I love that word, leadership. Okay, who sponsored today's show. They're working very, very hard with the National Association for the Education of Young Children. Walden will be sponsoring the upcoming NAEYC webinar. It's a series, Thought Leaders in Early Childhood. We did a show yesterday about that with one of their educational leaders at Walden, Martha Cheney, and one at NAEYC, Dr. Kyle Snow, who our guest today, Diane, knows. To learn more about Walden University, by the way, that's archived on education-talkradio.org. To learn more about Walden University's early childhood degree programs and how you can connect with nationally recognized education experts, master teachers, and scholar practitioners, go over to their website, www.waldenu.edu, and then you can go /education. You can also call 866-492-5336, but it's radio and it's easier to give you the website. You'll remember it easier, waldenu.edu/education. You can if you call 866-492-5336, you can speak with an enrollment advisor, but believe me, they will get in touch with you. Earn your education degree from Walden, an NCATE-accredited university, dedicated, and they are, to increasing educator effectiveness, as is NAEYC in terms of the education of young children. Thank you, Diane. That was just great. Peter Pizzolongo over at NAEYC, thank you so much for setting this up. Wonderful show. We'll do more. And Jen over at Walden, thank you for sponsoring today's show, everybody over there. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Education K-12 Education Talk Radio, education-talkradio.org. We tweet at EduTalk Radio. We're going to archive the show at our website. Sorry for that little blast of music. Let's get that down here. I don't know why the music's so loud today. Okay, but Diane, thanks for hanging on the line while we had that little glitch at the beginning of the show. It's a good day now. The sun is out, even in southwestern Maine. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.